even between like women and men, and nature versus, like human and the natural world. And yeah, I'm just curious on how the contemporary, like how you brought that into the piece.
Well, I do. I mean, when I first read this piece, it initially opens with the two women, and one is described as being very frail and wearing dresses and being the more that kind of thing, and the other one is manly and does all the farm work and wears pants, and you're like, wow, this really seems like he's as far as he can portraying, what in modern times would be a lesbian couple. But in the 19, as much as he could in the 1920s. And then, of course, Henry comes in and ruins it. Well, he's not a clear-cut villain either. I like that in modern times, I think a lot of these kind of relationships aren't very clear. I know there's a lot of labels for different types of things people can be, but I think the more modern people get, the less a lot of modern youth like labels. They like being kind of nebulous. I don't want to define myself and restrict my what I can do. So even the character of Henry, I know he when he arrives, he has a lot of comments about how he's attracted to one of the women because she is like a man. And so even he has, you kind of think if you could rescue these characters from the 1920s and bring them to the modern world, you think they probably, the more negative aspects of the story might not have happened if they weren't constrained by, I mean, that
I know
doesn't
what
come
you
up in those words, but like toxic masculinity kind of constraints of
totally.
society.
Totally. And I feel like even in this day and age, when you look around and you say, wow, haven't we progressed so far? You see people still living in those ideologies and how much it
Oh,
hurts
yeah.
them, you know? And so seeing this on stage in an opera form, also, it's always easier to, like, I guess, swallow social issues when it's packaged to you in a very, like, engaging way. And so it seems like a great show to watch to be able to kind of wrap your mind around these dynamics and maybe, question a little bit of your own, prejudices and biases when it comes to what they say. Because it is from 1922. And adapt, yeah. Lawrence is like the fox is, I think, like you said, a short story that kind of wraps everything up together. And so I was wondering about, your idea that these two women at the center of the story, I mean, they've been read in many ways, right? Like you kind of read it a little bit in the romantic sense. Like how did that like guide your d development of this story? Like, I don't know if that makes sense in terms of what do you want the audience to interpret from this?
Well, I do if I love a story, I often think I love it as it is. So I never want to add too much of my own personal, what I want to see. I like it when things are vague and you have to, because it is truer to life. But I think the women, they are best friends. They own a farm together. They live together in the novella and the opera. They sleep in the same bed. Theoretically, just for warmth, but because it's a cold farmhouse, it's never quite said aloud what they have. But I think also they have a content life with each other that hasn't ever been challenged. And because they're so isolated, they haven't needed to define their true feelings for each other. So
Totally.
obviously, they love each other, whether or not in a romantic way. Although that's ob absolutely a valid thing. But I think because Henry enters, he ironically forces them to actually have to put into words what they feel, which in one of the women's cases is she obviously feels quite strongly about the other woman, which I tried to express in her arias and music. But weirdly, unless he did, if he had never come in, they probably would never have had to actually fight for each other, which they end up having to do in this opera.
Wow, that's such a beautiful, I think, story and sentiment to the kind of reality that happens in everyone's life, Like when you get comfortable, you kind of maybe take for granted and what you have and then realize that it's going to be something that will be worth the fight. And so is there a moment in the opera, like a scene or a passage that you really want your audience to experience for themselves? Like one of those like emotional and or even funny moments. Like I'm sure there's some moments of
There is. I try to get a little bit of levity in there in all my operas here and
comedic.
there. Even the opera I just finished is very dark, kind of World War I horror, but I thought I gotta put one comedic moment just for something. I don't know. Well, I mean, I think that probably the most open-ended part of this is the very ending, which I won't try and spoil, though you could just read the novella. But I actually didn't include the very final scene in the novella in the opera, because I thought it's like a time skip, and I thought it'd be very hard to stage. And I liked that leaving the ending slightly open-ended means that the audience can interpret what they think happens. Again, I'm trying not to give it away. There is a negative possibility to the ending, or a positive one, depending on how kind of strong you think some of the characters are. Totally. So I am very curious to think, had to see how people interpret the ending.
That's awesome. Yeah, because I feel like having it be a little bit more open-ended allows people to fill in those gaps and those blanks. And the readings, I think, in the history of the fox being such a prominent like piece, have always been debated, right? Like, kind of like, what is the relationship? And so what is going to be coming from this? And so I would say you're the first woman composer specifically to bring this story to the opera. And so how did that work for you? And like, being a woman in a, I think opera is kind of always known to make women suffer in some ways, like, and so as a woman composer, how does that fit into your reclaiming of the story and the space?
I mean, in a really practical way, there's so many women opera singers and so many operas. You'll get a lot of modern operas that'll be about 10 guys. Mm. And you're like, there's so few tenors around, but there's so many operas that require so many that it is nice when you think, oh, the story's got multiple women characters. And we've even double cast some of the characters. My character is double cast just because we think we got to get more opportunities for some sopranos to get in there. And also it's great then you can have all these different versions and different acting choices. But I wanted to adapt this because it was so perfect as a chamber opera. As I say, it's only got three characters. It has an amazing dramatic arc for such a not brief, but it's compared to a novel, it's a great dramatic. And there's so much description of their voices and their and the music of the woods and stuff that it was perfect. But yeah, I love that their relationship is the main plot. Mm-hmm. And it is kind of a character study almost of these two women, especially in that time period. And I have a lot of, I've got a lot of elderly aunts who were unmarried, and they probably lived lives, not that they were necessarily, they were often kind of loners themselves, but they lived lives where they never got married and they kind of just could do what they want. And they would go on trips and join photography clubs. And you think, I think they lived really happy lives despite never getting married or having children or anything. And I certainly have some uncles who are like that too. And then even in modern times, two of my friends are really great best friends, and neither one of them really sees romance necessarily in their future. And they live together, and they've actually decided, why aren't we just getting married?
Yeah, it's better.
Really,
yeah, I guess hard. It's harder nowadays, like to think about the fact that marriage is an institution, right? And so being engaging in that versus not engaging in that is like, it's completely your own decision. It doesn't have to have anything to do with quote unquote like feverish romantic love, you know? And so it's beautiful. Like, yeah, I feel like that brings a really nice freshness to the story that might have been written in a time in which people were not given these kinds of like ways of thinking. And so somebody who's writing this revival of it, did you find it easy to stick, like, or did you find it sticking to Lawrence's words and or like ideas? Like, where did Lawrence start and you finish, if that makes sense, you know?
I mean, I really, all of the words really are from the novel. One of my favorite things about adapting something is, I mean, I do write, but, you know, it's one thing being all right writing and another writing an entire script or libretto. And so all the words are his, but it's like a puzzle of rearranging sections into, this is a scene, but can I make it into an aria? And thinking about varied structure where you think, well, this scene has a trio, this scene has a duet, you want it to be different throughout the opera. And so the great thing is, often when things are adapted into like a movie, what you usually lose is all the internal thought processes of the characters, which is always, if you know the book, you always feel, oh, I wish I could hear it in the movie. So it's great in opera or theater. So often you have characters who sing aloud what they're thinking. And so it was great with D.H. Lawrence. He has so many internal monologues that are very poetic. So the words are already beautiful. You know, you don't have to they work so well on in a song. And so I loved being able to bring those out in arias, and especially in one scene there is a trio which each character is singing their own internal monologue that they were having the scene at
Wow.
the same time. So they all have different words, but I think of it as kind of a choose your own adventure trio. That's why you have to come see the opera 3 times, so you can
Yes.
time pick a different character to hear their
It makes
sign,
sense
their
because
song.
it's playing for 3 days, right? Like it's
Exactly.
running at the Annex from April 17th to April 19th. So that's in a little less than a month. It's very exciting.
It is.
How do you feel about that process, like wrapping it all up and getting it ready to be on like performing stage, I guess, like ready for opening night?
Oh, I mean, I know it feels like we have such a long rehearsal process because we started rehearsing on March 15th, but now I look at the calendar and we're already at April almost, and suddenly it's all speeding up. But we've just finished blocking all of Act One on Monday, and then today we're starting to block Act Two. So I think by Friday, probably the entire thing will be roughly staged. And then our director Chris likes to stage fast, and then you go back. And we've already had so many discussions about the really details of what are the characters feeling on specific lines and musical interludes. What do those mean? Because there's also a lot of physicality in the book where characters are getting close to each other or hunting or, that kind of thing. So I tried to represent that in music. So there's been a lot of discussion of what exactly is this note meaning for each character, which again is very cool when you're a composer that people really take your work so seriously that they are considering every note. What are we doing with it?
Totally.
That's
It must be
fun.
nice to work with Vancouver artists again as well, and
Oh
to be
yeah.
the one who is directing, not on stage, but giving your like 2 cents. How does it
Yeah, yeah.
feel to have those roles reversed right now for you to be stepping into the kind of coordinator role, I guess?
Yeah, well, I'm in one of the days as Jill because
Nice.
well, it's when I because I have done opera and I write it, I can sing every part. So I'm kind of the understudy for everyone. If anything terrible happened, I can we even discussed at one point that if something happened to Henry, I can do it.
I could see you
So
as
I
a
would
hen. I
change
could
the
see you as a
dynamics a little bit.
Henry. I feel like
Yeah, I've got my
that'd be really interesting because it would be like a last minute like necessity, but it would be something that the crowd and the audience would really like, I guess, enjoy.
Oh yeah, and even in stuff that not that I'm working on any new operas already, but in one I might be doing, even there you think all these characters don't have to be guys. I have flipped a couple of them into being different voice types, and the opera I just finished, we toyed with having every voice you can transpose it so that everyone can be played by anyone of any
Nice.
gender for variety. But
Which is
yeah,
awesome. I think that Shakespeare did it, you know what I mean?
of course.
Like and so why can't we? Like that was the biggest thing, right? Like there was not enough women back then that were a part of the arts, right? And so now we're in this little bit of a flip where women are seeing the value in arts sometimes more like engaged than men. And so
Oh, yeah.
I think we should be able to do it. I think women would play amazing men on stage.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But yeah, no, I talked with Chris before we started rehearsals about how do I feel having written it but not directing it now. And I mean, when back in the workshop, our director of the workshop there said that when she wrote a libretto back in the day, she would occasionally be frustrated when somebody had a totally different interpretation of her character than she did until she realized that the fact that they have their own interpretation means that they care enough about her character to actually to bring something new to it. So I totally agree. And I was saying to Chris and in this, I love that he is a director. If he finds something new that I never considered, I want him to go with it. Like I love the idea that someone will bring something completely new angles to a lot of these things that even I didn't see,
Totally, and that's the best part about collaborating in this like art form, right? Like chamber opera too has more than just a director involved. I mean, you have the musicians, you have the actors on stage, and you have of course the stage hands and everything. And so how does that work with the musicians that you have and then the actors and kind of creating that entire unison through the whole thing? How does that
Oh,
feel?
yeah. Well, our first initial thing was just working through the opera all musically. And it was similarly to Chris, our great music director, Perry, our pianist. She would often have her own, she would give me notes when I was singing, which again, I love because I wrote it, but I would still think, oh, she was right. My diction in that line wasn't correct. Or, and she'd have suggestions of musical things of, I'd love it if you held that word longer until the instruments came in. And I thought, even though it's my music, I love that. I'll go, yeah, that's right. I agree. You know, I should hold it longer and have it be like that. So we haven't worked with the instrumentalists entirely. We've worked with our pianist because that's kind of the core. Yeah. And the poor pianist, sometimes they'll have all the violin parts and they'll just play a bit to them here and there to try and help out. Mm-hmm. But eventually we will be with, it's a trio of instruments. It's piano, violin, and cello.
Yay.
And they all add a different element. So it truly doesn't come together till everyone is playing, because there's one scene where we don't have the sound of the wind because there's no strings yet.
Yeah, true.
So I know once it's all together, it's at even acting, you feel frostier when they're bringing in that element, you know?
Yeah, of course.
I love writing, it's called programmatic music in the, probably not just the classical world, but it's where the music represents things, which I find is the only way I can write music. But it's got to be, this part is a bird call and this is the trees rustling, you know.
That's,
I have
awesome
to have that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's natural sound effects, I feel like. Yeah. Like, it's so funny when people think about films and they think about the sound effect from films. They don't realize it's actually someone in a room like tapping on a little cup and trying to recreate that sound. And so you get to do that with the beautiful instruments that you have as well.
That's
incredible. So yeah, if you decide to come, listeners, to watch The Fox, D.H. Lawrence's 1922 novella that is being adapted into a chamber opera, when it's running at the Annex April 17th to April 19th. I like to just say that every other second, because at the end of the day, it's a radio. So sometimes people will tune in and then they'll be like, what is this amazing thing that we've been talking about? And have to remind them. And so I think lastly, what I would love is just some context of like where the novella was set. And to begin with, you said it was after the Spanish flu. Well, during the Spanish flu, World War One, or World War One. How did that like come into creating the piece itself? Like, how did you create that space and kind of embody the time period within your within your piece?
Well, it's weird because on the one hand, the story does feel out of time in that they're so isolated that the outside world doesn't really impact them. Even Henry, who arrives, he almost arrives out of a dream. He's kind of he does arrive out of a dream. There's a dream sequence, then he shows up. But so on the one hand, they're very isolated from the world, but at the same time, the reason he's there is because the Spanish flu is taking over the town nearby, so we can't stay there. And he's just come from World War One, and there is moments of there's hints that he's had got some PTSD possibly from war. There's talk of that rifles are a big thing in the show. There's hunting and also the war, and he says we've seen enough of rifles at one point. So they definitely impact the story. And there is also the thing of societal norms. One of the characters, Jill, is very, despite the fact these two women are living alone together, that is much more acceptable kind of than the fact that a man joins them. So these factors do encroach on the women in the farm. But when we first did the workshop, somebody watching it went, how am I supposed to know it's World War One unless they say the date in the opera? And I was like, well, hopefully with the costumes, you know, for the program, you'll know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you could take it out of time, and it's so many, I mean, we still have, obviously these days, so many wars and the COVID, and I think a lot of it is, you could just bring it right to the modern era and it would be similar.
Yeah, totally. And I think that brings a lot of depth into the characterization itself, because it is like a timeless issue, right? This feeling of like, you know, trying to separate yourself from this crazy world that's going on, and how to create peace in your own space, and then having these disruptions kind of come in. Do you feel like when you were writing the piece and composing the music, you pulled in these like I guess timeless emotions, if that makes sense? Like, how did you write the piece in a way that, like, write the different pieces in a way that emotionally like described these emotions, I guess, these beliefs?
Oh, well, I was thinking of just the two women characters. There was originally a scene that was entirely cut where they sang a duet because I wanted to establish the world. You know, I didn't want to have the drama start too quick. I wanted you to be settled in the time period, and they were singing a folk song about kind of their relationship and the farm. But it was deemed in the original workshop that it delayed the drama a little bit too long, so it ended up being cut. But there's a melody from it that goes through the whole opera because
Oh,
I love motifs. I love if the gun itself has a little musical motif whenever they have it that's in the soundtrack, or each character has their own motifs that when they're on stage that comes into the music. And so there's this one melody that's from the cut scene that originally you would have the context it's the two women's duet, but that's gone now. So I almost like it more that they share this melody between them that often comes out in moments where they're being particularly courageous, or you know, and it's no longer explained, so it becomes, even to the audience, they don't get the full history of the women, but through the music
Totally.
you can see they share these melodies that just naturally that other characters, or that Henry doesn't like the melody when in his moments when he's not having a good time is when it is playing. So I kind of like that context got removed, but it's now harkens to like a deeper, you know, relationship that even the audience isn't there. You kind of are, I always feel like the audience is like peering in through the trees and watching the story,
Totally.
and then getting pushed back out again. You're just seeing it play out.
That's awesome. And I guess now if the audience here of this radio
Now they know.
chooses to go in, they're gonna know. So I thank you for letting us in on that little secret. I think
Course.
I love a little secret history too. As a creator of a piece, right, you have these little what is it, Easter eggs throughout your piece that you feel especially attuned to, because you know you can't have it all when you're a creator. You can't have all your brilliant ideas in one piece, and so very exciting to have a little bit of that extra sparkle. Thank you so much for sitting with me and chatting with me
Oh, of
for
course.
this time, and for giving our listeners a little bit more information and a glimpse, as they say, into the chamber opera, The Fox, which you composed, and it will be running again at the Annex April 17th to April 19th, adaptation of D.H. Lawrence's 1922 novella, The Fox, by the same name. As a whole, this has been a great conversation, and I really look forward to hopefully seeing the play myself, and for everyone else to hopefully have that opportunity as well. Thank you again for such a great chat. I hope
Oh,
you have
thanks. I was
a great day.
just gonna say one last thing. So I was gonna mention it earlier, it never came up, but I was gonna say I love the CJSF radio, of course. And speaking of Easter eggs, is that my uncle? I have some. He was kind of my rock and roll uncle. He was called Grant Shankarak, and he actually had a program on CJSF for over 20 years.
Lovely.
So when I heard about this interview, I was like, oh my God, I have to make sure I remember all the facts. But he had one called the it was a music show called the Downliners Crypt that was all garage punk rockabilly. He was in a surf band which had songs on SpongeBob as my SpongeBob heiress.
Oh my
But
gosh, that's another great Easter egg. Yeah, that's
and then
awesome.
I think at one point on his show, I think after I won the best singer-songwriter of the Lower Mainland when I was probably like, I don't know, 13 or 14, he played one of my
Congratulations.
compositions on his show called The Train, and I actually referenced that composition. I stole part of the melody for The Fox. There's a scene with the train.
Whoa, that's
That's my
incredible.
CJSF Easter egg for the fox.
I love that. Well, CJSF is a small world, and so thank you again for coming into our world.
Oh, thank you for
Again,
having me.
I hope you have a great day, and thank you again. This was an incredible interview.
Oh, thanks.
Congratulations. Congratulations on this amazing feat.
Thank you very much. I look forward to re-listening to this and saving it from my archives.
Yes, me too. Me too. This will be a great one for the archives. Bye. Hope you have a great day.
Yes, you too. I have to go off to rehearsal, so.
Have a great rehearsal.
Thank you. All right. Bye.
And I hope you enjoyed this conversation, especially Rowan's connection to CJSF. I absolutely love that. Again, The Fox is a new chamber opera composed by Rowan Shankaruk, presented by Opera Unbound at the Annex in Vancouver on April 17th, April 18th, and April 19th. And if you want more info, or especially if you plan to attend, I am going to include links to for the show, as well as links to the Opera Unbound website.
The Slate Family Foundation Legacy Program was created by the Unison Fund to support Canadian music industry veterans. For more information on this lifeline of hope, visit unisonfund.ca.
Good morning. This is your wake-up call.
Liver disease affects 1 in 4 Canadians. While liver disease may be part of your story, it doesn't define it. Liver Canada is here for you. Find support at liver.ca.
And we've actually come to the end of the show. Can you believe it? I want to thank everyone for joining me today. Again, it is so great to be back. Before I make way for Democracy Now!, here is a song from Brandy Younger. The track is called BBL, and it's a good one, actually, and it is off her album Gadabout Season.